Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and I am super excited for you all to meet my great friend, Dr. Josh Smith. Josh is an incredible psychologist, an amazing human being. He spoke at our last Inner Circle retreat, and today Josh and I are going to talk all about chronic pain, what it's like physically to be in chronic pain, a couple great analogies for this. What it's like emotionally to be in chronic pain, how to best communicate, how to adjust things. And he also brings to the table a bunch of information that will help you. I guarantee that will help you regardless of if you're in chronic pain or not. So let's get this episode started. Here is Dr. Josh Smith. Hello, Josh. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. So Josh and I are going to sit here and pretend like we haven't been talking for the last 5 minutes.
we're going to open up with on random things.
We're going to open up with pure transparency here. Josh is a dear friend that I got to know through Jordan. It's been a couple years now, and you spoke at our retreat, the last retreat we had, and you were fabulous. And Jordan and I have both said that when we get the retreat up and running again, you're coming again, whether you want to or not.
I would never miss it.
Yeah. But I'm so glad you and I have the opportunity to hop on this podcast, because it's interesting. I follow you, you follow me, and I see all the great stuff that you put out, and so much of your stuff resonates with me every single time I see it. And I know it resonates with so many other people. And I just want everyone to get to know you and know how fabulous you are. And we're going to talk about chronic pain today. And I'm sure we'll get into other things as well through that journey. And one of the reasons, and this is again, in full transparency, this is a topic that we decided to talk about is because I am suffering through chronic pain right now, and a lot of things that go with that. So we're going to kind of break that down. But Josh, take a few seconds here and let everyone know kind of who you are and what you do and everything cool about you.
Everything cool about me. Oh my God. Yes. If I asked my kids, they would be like, "You're such a dad." I wish I had more cool things. No, so I'm a psychologist, but more specifically, I 3 days a week I work in a pain clinic as a pain psychologist. 2 days a week I'm in private practice, much more kind of individual couples, family therapy, things like that. A little bit more of the traditional what you would see. I've had an interesting overall course. I started working in inpatient settings, all with severe and persistent mental illness. So a lot of people who had, kind of major mental illness, sometimes mixed with medical in an inpatient setting. I think it's probably been almost 7 years now that I've been working with chronic pain or in medical settings.
I had no idea, by the way. I didn't even connect that. Wow.
Well, it's funny because there's a bunch of different things I do. I mean, I did a lot of trauma work in the past. I've done a lot of different, what ends up coming out is, depending on who I'm talking to or what setting, or right at the retreat, I was more talking about motivation and understanding your internal drive and recognizing patterns where you might be sacrificing without not even realizing it. Or the pain component is an interesting one, because I think so many people have some sort of chronic condition, whether it's from mild to a little bit more serious. And when it gets into pain, it's a whole different thing. Mm. And just as an overview, right? Like, I mean, because I very often the first questions I get are like, "What is a pain psychologist?" Yeah. And it's funny because when I work with people who have all sorts of of chronic pain conditions, anywhere from kind of degenerative diseases like arthritis, degenerative disc disease, things like that, to failed surgeries, or people who have had back surgery and have long-standing back pain, nerve-based conditions, fibromyalgia, endometriosis, it really runs the gamut. But anybody who's dealing with a chronic condition, part of what our pain clinic does is, in addition to the medical care that they get, we have a couple pain psychologists, and It's funny because so often people get sent to me and they're a little bit gruff in the beginning because they think their provider sent them to me to say, oh, your pain is in your head. It is not at all like, you know what, you know, the case. Pain psychology is really based off of, I mean, what I do has kind of two different components. One side of it is purely physiological. I teach relaxation techniques, meditation, breathing exercises, progressive muscle relaxations, all of which have been really well researched and found to be helpful with pain. And the concept or idea is that when your body is in pain, your whole autonomic nervous system, all of these components we have no conscious control over, like heart rate, blood pressure, muscle tension, you know, sweat production, all these things that the body runs for us. When the body is in pain or anticipating pain, it has a natural, unavoidable physiological response. The body tenses up.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to like a fight or flight response. You know, fight or flight is more like if you're out, you know, for a walk and a dog is running towards you, it's the autonomic nervous system or that fight or flight that goes, uh-oh, there's danger. So shot of adrenaline, get your heart rate and blood pressure up, get your muscles ready to defend yourself. But if somebody catches that dog and leashes it, there's a visual cue that tells your body, oh, there's no more danger. So yeah, bring everything okay. back down.
Yeah.
Right. Which is often referred to as a relaxation response. So if the pain stress response is what gets everything going, the relaxation response is what brings it back down. But with a dog, with an example of an actual threat, there's a visual cue. With chronic pain, it's almost like having an invisible assailant. So there's no cue. There's nothing that tells your body that there's no danger. So the body stays in this slightly heightened state of tension. And the problem is so much of pain is caused by swelling or inflammation or something is being pushed or poked or is irritated and something is pushing outward essentially in an area where there isn't room.
Yeah.
So if you imagine if the entire musculoskeletal system around it then pulls in out of self-protection, it can exacerbate pain symptoms.
I just, everything that you just said, I'm like, yep. I mean, it makes so much sense for what I'm going through, even with all of that. It makes so much sense.
It's amazing. So partially what I'm doing is I'm teaching people these techniques almost as like a life hack for your body. Can you trigger your body's natural relaxation response? Can you lower your heart rate, lower your blood pressure, increase circulation, which can decrease inflammation? It can help with healing time. And over time, it can decrease the intensity, severity, or duration of pain. It can't make it go away. I wish it could. Truthfully, if you could do a breathing technique and make your pain go away, there would be 50 of me and there would be fewer pain providers. But,
yeah,
you know, what I'm working with often is anything you can do. If you can reduce your pain by 5, 10%, that's 5 or 10% that can go towards anything else in your life.
Yep.
And so what's interesting is some of the work I do is biofeedback work. There's a lot out there about meditation for stress, anxiety, depression, all of which I think it's very helpful for. But what I'm after is a physiological response. So if you're doing a breathing technique for stress, like, well, if you're about to go into a big meeting or if you're about to be on the Today Show, and you're nervous, you don't, if you do a breathing technique and at the end of it, you feel relaxed, well, then you don't need me to tell you that it worked. It's much harder to do a breathing exercise and at the end of it say, oh, I got my heart rate down 6 beats per minute.
Yeah.
We don't have any internal rubric for that. So I teach people these relaxation techniques. And then when they come in for a biofeedback appointment, I actually hook them up to some monitors. Nothing, it just mainly goes on the hands, everyone that goes on the ear. And if after this, if any of your listeners are interested in it, I can send you information on there's some at-home biofeedback monitors that you can get.
Perfect. Yeah, that would be great.
But basically I hook somebody up to a monitor and I give them 10, 15 minutes to try out whatever technique we're working on. And I get live readings on what's happening to respiration, heart rate, circulation, capillary constriction, sweat production. And at the end of it, I can literally pull it up on the screen and we look at it together. And so if I've had people come in who say, Josh, I'm doing this ridiculous thing you asked me to, I don't think it's doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we pull that up and they can see that after 2 minutes, they've regulated their heart rate. They've reduced muscle tension. They've increased, you know, when people can see that it's having a physiological benefit, it helps with buy-in.
I was just going to ask you that. So there's physiological changes going on, but the person doesn't necessarily believe it or feel it.
Yep. Well, because it's so hard. Yeah. I mean, intellect and emotion, right, don't speak the same language.
No.
I mean, it's kind of one of those things of probably even for health and well-being altogether, we know intellectually all of these things that are helpful for us. But it's almost as if it's like, right, we presented all the facts and the intellect part of the brain goes, yep, that makes perfect sense. And I agree with all of it. And the emotion system is like, I don't care, but I want to stay up really late and eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, but did you hear the presentation? And they're like, yeah, I don't care. That's not what I want. And you're like, so it's why sometimes people get in this, like in this mode where they're like, if I know it, how come I can't do it? And it's like, yeah. Right. Because your emotion system and your intellect, they don't respond to the same.
It's so interesting because I use an example a lot with people that are struggling to lose weight about having a weight loss car, and the driver of that weight loss car is nutrition. Right. And because you won't lose weight without your nutrition being in check, and the passenger's training, and how we would love passenger to drive, but that ain't going to happen. But then we have the asshole in the back who is emotion, and emotion's the guy that wants to say, turn left, turn left, turn left, turn left. And if you turn left, you're now going down this long, windy road because emotion told you, convinced you to turn left, you know, and we fall into that, you know, all the time with a lot of things. But it makes so much sense with this that I mean, there might be a change going on, but if we don't have some hardcore evidence or something, then maybe we don't believe it.
Well, it's harder to work it into your schedule. It's harder to, you know, it's funny. I saw a presentation years ago and it's the most simple slide I've ever seen. You know, it was a picture of a bar stool, like a three-legged bar stool. And we've all heard variations of this before. And the presenter was saying that if you take this three-legged stool, each leg is a different part of what you need for health. One of them, he was saying, was regular routine maintenance, care, doctor's appointments, kind of making sure that you're taking care of your health. The second one is if we ever need intervention, surgical, otherwise, like if you break a bone, you need to go someplace. And the third leg, he said, is self-care. And basically what he was saying is if you shortchange self-care, that stool will never be as sturdy as it can.
Mm.
So even if those other two are in good shape, if your self-care leg is shorter, it might be okay, but it's going to be tippy.
Yeah.
But that leg takes so much more effort, so much more work. The other two, it's like, hey, if I go to my doctor because I have, you know, high cholesterol and he gives me a pill, well, that's much less work for me than if every single day I have to get up and I have to stretch and I have to make myself a healthy breakfast. And that one's all on me. So in part, sometimes the biofeedback I do, people know it. Again, the intellect, they know it. But when you're put up against it and you're like, am I going to build this into my day? Am I going to set aside 5 minutes twice a day to do a breathing exercise? That comes out of your time. And so when people can see it and they go, oh, whether I'm feeling it emotionally or not, I can see that it's had a physiological impact. It helps increase buy-in.
Yeah.
And for some people, it just, you know, for some people, it can be self-competitive. It's almost like they like knowing, okay, well, now that I know it's doing something, it just takes this component that's normally invisible that you would just have to believe. You would just have to say, okay, I believe the research. I believe the, and you can now see how it impacts your physiology. And it also helps me if it doesn't work. If I have somebody come in and we've been working on a meditation and they say, oh, I love it, it's really relaxing, but we pull it up and I can say, okay, well, we're not getting the same physiological response I was hoping for. So now you might be getting the relaxation, but you're not getting the medical benefit.
Mm.
That helps me because now I know we have to pivot and try something different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big proponent of, you know, just kind of handing somebody, oh, here's this one system that supposedly works for everybody. No, you have to figure out what works for you, what fits your style, what can fit into your lifestyle. If not, you know, I mean, I was saying this to somebody the other day that was trying to figure out some ways to alter their sleep pattern. And they had been given tons of recommendations. And I was basically like, wait, before you even try them, look at it, see what it would require, and see whether or not you can actually integrate that into your life. Because if you can't, if it doesn't fit your style, who cares if it works?
Yeah.
You won't maintain it.
You won't.
You'll do right. it. It'll work for however long. And then once you've gotten a few good nights sleep, you're going to go back to. So you don't want to assess if it works, if it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
But so the biofeedback, it's not treatment, right? It's really a measurement tool. It's a way to see if we're getting those results. And by the way, real life biofeedback, or an example of that would be, if you're interviewing somebody and they're nervous or tense, heart rate and blood pressure go up, the body tends to keep blood kind of in the trunk and head. So you get less circulation to the extremities. So your hands will get cold when you're tense or nervous. Also, it triggers a sweat response. So when somebody's nervous, their hands are going to be kind of cold and clammy. You meet somebody on vacation when everybody's nice and relaxed, their hand is more likely to be warm and dry. Those are physiological indicators of where the body is at. And when you are in pain all the time, it's an intense experience.
Yeah.
The body is constantly in this state. And anytime I present to, to med students, to nursing students, if I'm just presenting to a class and people ask me to explain chronic pain, my go-to is I'll say to people, okay, well, imagine somebody follows you around all day long with a taser, and they can adjust the taser anywhere from a 1 all the way to a 10. And they say to you, oh, I'm definitely going to tase you. I'm just not going to tell you when, where, or how intense, but yeah. Ignore me.
Yeah.
And go about your day.
Yes, yes, yes. Like, I want to just like, this is exactly it.
So, right. It's because if you think about it, if we're sitting here talking, if I have an issue with my lower back, if I sit at this desk all day long, end of the day, my back is going to hurt. If I have a taser person over my shoulder and all day, I'm kind of worried when I'm going to get tased, my whole body tenses up. Which means end of the day, my back is going to be on fire.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just impact the physiology. It impacts memory, focus, mood. Because if you and I are talking, right? I mean, if you imagine, if I have a taser person over my shoulder, I can't be 100% focused on our conversation.
Right.
At best, I'm 80%. 20% is reserved for keeping an eye out
on that
for
taser.
My pain or for my taser person. You know, but the problem is if my taser person shifts in their seat, if they move for just a second, my focus shifts, right? I'm no longer 80-20. I'm probably 90-10 focused on pain. Now, if I turn and it literally my pain person was just recrossing their legs and moving, okay, well, I come back to the conversation. But it means I missed 2-3 seconds. I know what you were saying before. I know what you're saying now. And people get really sick of having to basically say, oh, crap, I'm sorry, what was that? Which means conversations get more difficult because now I'm working harder to fill in that gap of what did I miss? And God forbid I get tased.
Yeah. And, you know, all of that takes its toll emotionally, too, because then
yes.
You become that person, like, no one really wants to talk to you because they never know if they're going to have the complete conversation or if you're going to focus enough, right? Because on the outside, it just looks like you're just kind of flaking out. But you've got a whole separate thing going on that nobody sees. And I say this as I have to shift in my chair because my hip is starting to feel it. My taser person behind me is shooting at my hip, right? So yep. I feel this. And I feel like this takes me personally down roads of, okay, people don't get this. And I don't want to be that person to people. I don't want to suck the life out of anybody else. I'm already having the life sucked out of me. I don't want to suck the life out of anybody else because I can't be present, or I appear that I'm not present, or, you know, all of that. I don't want to burden people with me having to mess with my little Tasia person behind me. You know, it's kind of like I'm trying to protect them from what I'm having to deal with, which is like.
Well, that's why what, you know, we were talking about before, it's so exhausting.
Yes.
Right? Because my experience, and by the way, if I'm ever dead wrong, you can just be like, nice try, but no. People who have chronic pain go to pretty great lengths not to show that they're in pain.
Yeah.
And I think partially that's because when you have a chronic condition, it takes up so much of your time, energy, and effort that you don't want it to take up any more than it has to.
That's it.
So people put a lot of energy into, hey, if I'm around somebody else or I'm being social, I don't want the headline of every story or of every conversation to be about my pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the difficulty is, I think that some people you don't want to know, right? There are some people that it's like, yeah, I don't need you to know anything about my personal life. I'm good. There are other people that you almost want them to see through it and know that you're not at your best, but also know that you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's a real catch 22, because if I fool that person in my life, well, I can't be mad at them when they don't see it because I'm the one fooling them.
Yes.
And I could tell them, but I don't want to talk about it.
Yes.
So what it leaves people with is, I think there is a loneliness component to pain that we just don't talk about.
And it's interesting you bring that up, because that was one of the things that I told you before, I didn't write down questions, but that point right there is one of the points I was going to actually bring up, the loneliness factor, because people don't understand it. You don't want to burden people with it, but yet you want to talk about it because you feel like nobody gets it. I mean, it's this circle, right? Nobody gets it, but you don't want to burden somebody with it. I don't want to be that person that sucks the life out of everybody because, oh my God, I don't want to talk to her because all we're going to hear about is her pain. So you keep it in, you purposefully put on the, I'm doing, you know, when somebody asks me, how's your hip? I don't even know how to answer that anymore, you know, because it sucks all the time. So people don't ask if I keep saying it sucks, or people, if I say it sucks, then I'm afraid I am burdening them with all this stuff, and they're not going to want to even be around me, because who wants to be brought down every single time you mistakenly ask somebody how they're doing? It's a catch 22, right?
It really is.
You're lonely. You want somebody to ask, yet you don't want to become that burden. You know, you don't, I don't know how, and I personally don't know how to juggle that, that's a tough spot.
Sometimes it's trying to figure out, okay, there's a spectrum here. Some people, you know, talk about themselves and any ailment that they've ever had nonstop.
Yeah.
You know, people would be like, did I tell you that I stubbed my left pinky toe like 3 weeks ago? And it's like weird that that's making it into conversation.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be on one spectrum, but
yeah,
being on the other side where you're like, you know what? It's just not something I let people in on. The drive for that, I think sometimes it's both self-protective and protective of other, you know, because you know, if I leave this meeting, right, and I looked upset or like miserable, or like, well, let's say my wife kind of walks up to me and says like, hey, what's wrong? Are you okay? Let's say in that moment, the real answer, no filter, the real answer is, you know, today's the worst day of my life. Okay. We don't tend to say that.
Yeah.
One is protective of other. If there's nothing my wife can do about it, I don't want to lay that burden on her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why would I want somebody else to carry that weight? The other part is self-protective. If I say that and it's out there now, and then I go take a shower or I go for a walk and I'm feeling a little bit better, but now I'm at dinner and my wife is looking at me and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, oh God, barely. And you asking me that is now pissing me off. So it's this better to keep it in and not tell anyone, because that's the only way I can kind of control when I do or don't want information. The problem becomes that loneliness variable. I think it's one thing to feel lonely when you are alone. If you look around and there's nobody here, the brain, the mind, the psyche, whatever we want to call it, can make sense of it. But if you're surrounded by people and they think they know what's going on with you, but they really don't, it's a different feeling of loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I sometimes will describe it almost, it's like being in a video game, but you're the only one who knows. And yeah. Everybody's playing their role, yourself included. And there are all these rules. And so when somebody walks up to you and says, hey, how you doing? I think we all do this quick internal calculation. Do they actually want to know? Or is this like a verbal handshake? Is this the rules of the game? In order to have a conversation, they have to ask, I respond. In those moments, if you're like, yeah, yeah, this is just a greeting. And you say, I'm hanging in. And most people with pain conditions have their default response that isn't, I'm doing wonderful, but mm-hmm. also isn't any sense. It's just that kind of like, yeah, you know.
That's me. Like, right? It goes back to, I don't know what to say. I mean, I could say, hey, I'm great. That's a lie. No, I'm really not great. Or I could say the opposite of that. Man, it just sucks. You know, the pain mm-hmm. is driving me crazy. And then somebody on the other who asks is going to be, oh God, great. Really glad I asked that, because what do they say? You know, what do they say trying to help me? You know, I'm worried about them. It's so odd, right? I'm worried about protecting them from.
Yeah. And if you think about it like that video game, when somebody says, how you doing? You're like hanging in, and it's like, great, completed. Now we can move to the next thing. But if the next thing is that friend is like, okay, good. I fulfilled that rule. I asked how you were doing. You said you're okay. If the next thing they jump to is, oh, did I tell you about the brand new car that I got? Oh, what a hassle it's been. And they want to go into it was delayed 3 months and they couldn't get the color they want. When you're in pain, it makes it hard to relate to people. That comes back to that head-heart split. Intellectually, you can say, hey, you know what? They have a right to be bummed about that. But emotionally, you want to be like, are you kidding me? Like, your biggest problem is that you had to wait 3 months for your brand new car and it came in dark gray instead of dark blue. You got to be shitting me. Like, yeah. People can't, in that moment, you want to be like, ugh, I can't meet you there. That's why it starts feeling like this separation where there's just a whole chunk of your life that people don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that loneliness component is hard. It's not an easy. And, you know, to close the taser example, right? It's also impacting you all over the place, right? Memory, right? If you're in the middle of talking to me and I get tased, you could have told me an important date. We could have scheduled something. I might have even responded and put it on my calendar. But if I just got tased, I'm not going to remember.
Yeah.
3 months from now, I could look at my schedule and be like, when did Susan and I agree to have another call? I don't remember that at all. And then people will get into, is my memory going? Is my... Nope. It's because while I'm getting tased, if somebody asks me my birthday, I might not be able to tell them. And so what ends up happening is it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It makes people socially withdraw. And people love to say like, well, just come out. You'll feel better. Well, not necessarily.
No, not if it will
piss your taser person off.
Yeah.
if you're like, well, my taser person doesn't like the car, and I'll be within arm's reach. So that's, and if the restaurant is loud or the chairs are uncomfortable or it's running, well, if coming out means I'm going to get tased 15 extra times tonight, no, that's not fun.
Yeah.
And mood wise, it makes people not want to move. Because if at the end of the day, I sit on the couch and for the first time all day, my taser person is sitting across the room, reading the paper, playing on their phone, the threat's still there, but I have a little bit of distance. I don't want to move. I don't want to. Half an hour later, if I'm thirsty, I'm going to be worried to get up and go to the kitchen because I'm in part worried my taser person is going to go, oh, crap, what time is it? Oh, my God, I haven't tased you in half an hour. Don't worry. I'll follow you into the kitchen, zap you a couple times, and then I'll sit right next to you. So it makes it so I don't want to go out. I don't want to go anywhere. And mood-wise, we've all had those moments where you want to be able to turn to your taser person and be like, can you just leave me alone for just a minute? Just give me five minutes. I need to take a shower. I need to go to the bathroom. And your taser person just kind of shrugs and follows you into the bathroom.
Yeah.
And now you got to worry about getting tased when you're in the bathroom. And
yeah.
If you come out of the bathroom and your taser person is bearing down on you and you know, a roommate, a spouse, a partner, one of your kids is coming down the hallway, you know, and I can't stop my taser person. So if all of a sudden they're like, what color balloons should we get for Saturday? It will take a calm, normally happy, like, and they'll snap and be like, you know what? I don't give a about the color of the balloons. Because you can't stop the taser person. You're getting, and then when somebody's like, well, okay, you're like, no big deal. You'd have to, well, now all of a sudden you feel guilty. Yes. And you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
And so it's really, what's interesting is, I mean, this is kind of the second part of what I do, right? If the first part is the physiological, the second part is more cognitive behavioral, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I go over models like this to help people recognize if they're having a day where they're snapping at everybody, means that they've been tased a lot more.
Yeah.
And saying that somehow it gets a better response. Like if with your partner, you walk out of a meeting and you look like you're having a hard time, even if they're caring about, and they're like, what's wrong? Was it this? Was it that? Is it your hip? Is it your back? Is it in those moments, if you say, hey, that's too much, it's been a long day, people get defensive.
Yeah.
And they're more likely to say, well, I was just trying. If you kind of say, hey, time out, I've been tased a lot in the last hour, all of a sudden people tend to not get as defensive and go, oof, okay, sorry. So yeah. Some of what I go over is to help people understand and recognize where pain impacts them. Some of it is to be able to explain it to other people who don't get it. And by don't get it, I mean, people who love you and mm-hmm. care about you will say right. the dumbest stuff.
Right.
Like really not insensitive, not on purpose.
Right.
And my favorites, well, I shouldn't be sarcastic, but you know, the ones is when somebody says, how you doing? And you're like, I think they want to know, I'm going to give them a real answer. People will say things like, you know, oh my God, that's still hurting. Have you talked to a doctor?
Yeah.
If you've been living with chronic pain in that moment, you ought to be like, oh yeah, it's been like a decade of pain. Never occurred to me to let a doctor know.
Not one time did I think.
Right. Like, you know, or people love to be like, you know what? You should see my doctor. And you're like, oh my God, like,
here we go.
I don't need to see your internist that you've been seeing for 40 years.
Yeah.
Like who's known you. Like you want to be like, I'm on level like 7 subspecialist. It took me 2 years to even get that. Like, and also my favorite lately is, you know, and I'm not downplaying nutrition, but when people say, oh, my neighbor had something similar and went gluten-free and that solved everything.
Oh God.
And I'm not saying that like altering diet can't help with certain things, but when you're dealing with chronic pain or a degenerative joint or disc or like something that when somebody says that, you ought to be like, oh, interesting. I've had needles in my hip. I've had injections. I've had, you know, you would have thought a doctor would have said, or you just give up English muffins on the weekends.
Yeah, and you're you like, and we would have been
surgery or English muffins. Like, I'm pretty sure most people would be like, I'll pass on the hip replacement if I just have to give up gluten.
I can do that. Yeah. I feel so much of this in my soul, really, because it's it is one of those things where, especially for me, doing what I do, I feel like I have this armor. I'm wearing this armor, and now there's a kink in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough too, because you don't want to show too many kinks in your armor, you know, because what happens if you do that? Lord help us all, you know. And the logic part of me is saying, no, it shows that you're a human being is what it does. I mean,
yes.
It's so interesting. I know this, but it's still tough to show people that I have this kink now. Like when I go to the gym, it's not a pain-free experience. And I mm-hmm. am going because I know I want to go. I have to keep moving because ultimately for me in my situation, the more I move, the better. And I put that in quotes. The pain gets, it's still there. The taser person's still there, but mm-hmm. maybe they're on the other side of the gym at some point, you know, they're not quite as close, but I have to do it. And I also have to get my hip as strong and stable as possible before I have my surgery. You know, my goal is to be able to pop out the other side in a better place, but I have a kink in my armor now, you know, that taser person is the kink in my armor, I guess. And it's hard to admit that. It's hard to show that.
And it's hard to adjust.
Yes.
Especially when you don't like it.
Yeah. And
I think, unfortunately, we get very caught in sometimes binary thinking, right? Am I fighting against this? Am I trying to solve it, fix it, heal it, get it, or have I given up?
Yeah.
And I'm just accepting that this is a, and when the brain gets stuck in those two modes, what ends up happening is anytime you run into a scenario where you're like, hey, an accommodation here might help. Well, if the brain goes, wait, if I accept some sort of accommodation, if I make some sort of alteration, change, adjustment, does that mean I've given up? And I'm just, you know, right. So that could be as much as somebody in your family saying, hey, do you want me to drive? And for a second, you're like, actually, that would be really helpful. And then you're like, wait, wait, wait. If I do that right now, am I just accepting that I guess I'm one step closer to I'm going to always have to be the passenger? And for some people, especially people who fall into this kind of natural high achiever or who hold really high expectations of themselves, there is almost a knee-jerk FU response to that, to be like, no, I'm going to drive. In fact, not only am I going to drive the part of the day I already had planned on, I will also go do those other two errands that you were going to do.
Yeah.
Just to prove to myself I can drive.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, wait, where did that happen? And now when you're doing the second errand and your hip is on fire, you're like, what, how did I end up in this situation? And like, and you're like, you're starting to feel mad and you're starting to feel a little resentful. And you're like, wait a second, who made this happen?
Oh, yeah, right. Like, right. You know, yeah. Hello. And, right. Hello, me. Right. And I feel like too, that it's, I don't want people to treat me differently. That's a big thing, that if I admit to the kink in the armor, now they're going to think of me differently and then they're going to treat me differently. And that is, again, an emotional response, I feel like, because I don't feel like that is in reality what will happen. But in my head, it's like they're going to think of me differently now. So I can't, I have to pretend, you know, and then we go back to, boy, is that exhausting. I mean, holy crap. You know, on one hand, I'm exhausted by the end of a day, but because I'm exhausted, my sleep has actually been halfway decent, you know? So I kind of start, I start the next day kind of, okay, I had a good night, recharged and thinking maybe we'll go down a different path regarding this or whatever. And it's the same thing, you know, it just chips away at you throughout the course of the day because the taser person's not only hitting my hip now, but now it's decided my opposite knee is fair game, you know? So now I'm juggling two different scenarios, very different kinds of pain, and trying to manage, you know, what I do to manage one isn't helping the other. And, you know, it's just like, oh.
Yeah. It takes a big toll.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one, for anybody who's listening, who has any sort of chronic condition or chronic pain, on that binary thinking, I really always highlight when people talk about the notion of acceptance. A lot of providers like to say, like, well, you need to accept that this is going to be something you have to work around, or you have to. I think when people hear that, the notion of acceptance, what goes through most people's mind is, okay, so I have to accept that this is forever. That is too much. It is too much for the brain and the mind to, like, okay, wait, so I'm just accepting this new reality forever that I don't like. It almost can't do it. It's not how I look at acceptance. When I talk to people about it, I'm like, no, you don't have to accept that this is what it's going to be forever. You do have to accept that this is how it is today, or this week, or this month. So if you're planning a vacation for 3 weeks from now, yeah, it might be that you're considering two different vacations, and one vacation, you know, might involve a lot more walking or more travel or more, like, and it might be outside of what you can do. And the second vacation might be a little bit more in your wheelhouse. For somebody who has that guilt and doesn't want anyone else to be impacted, well, if your family is talking about it and says, no, well, what we want is you to be there and be present as much as possible. So, like, let's go with vacation B. Very often there's guilt around that, especially if most of your life, your goal has been, you know, make sure to add value or make other people's lives easier.
Yeah.
And, like, add to the team.
Yeah.
The team should never have to work around you.
Yeah.
The second they say, well, we're psyched for vacation A or B. And if B is better for you, let's do it.
Let's do B. Right.
There's a natural instinct to be like, no, I'm not going to accept that all of our future vacations now have to be, you know, planned around me.
Yeah.
But when you look at acceptance, not as a for all vacations, but a, you know what? Yep. This particular vacation, this particular pain presentation, I can't do A. And if I go do A, I'm only going to be present for maybe a third of it because I'm going to need more rest time or I'm going to, it's not a negative. And I think that it helps when you can say, right, this is my current reality. I would like it to be different in the future. But this is what I have to deal with now. I've actually made not like screensavers that may, you know, like basically your lock screen.
Oh yeah.
I've made them for people where I put like little mantras, like where I'll put like, I mean, usually I'll put like just like a pretty kind of like mountainscape or something like that. And I'll put right on there. This sucks. I hate it. It's happening. I have to deal with it, but it sucks.
Yeah.
And it'll just be a little. So when you look at your phone, it's the first thing you see is like, right, I don't have to. People, I think, mix up acceptance with peace. Mm. You can accept something. That doesn't mean that you have to make peace with it or like it. It just means you have to be able to say, this is what's going on right now.
That's a great point. I don't think people, I know I don't think of it that way. That's such a great point. Yeah. You don't have to like it. It's okay not to like it.
Yeah.
I don't like when the scale goes up. It's cool, but I don't get all emotional about it. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Same thing.
Which takes some time.
Yes.
It takes time. It's a skill to learn.
Yes.
To be able to, you know, not see each weigh in as a isolated fact-based reality.
Yeah.
It is all part of it. Right? I mean, I had a scale that like, there were times I would put it on the ground. You have to like step on it to get it to like calibrate.
Yeah.
If I moved it to a different place in the bathroom and redid it, sometimes it would come out with a different number.
Yeah.
And the first time I ever caught myself being like, ooh, I didn't like that first number. Let me see if I move it 3 feet to the right.
Yeah.
Will I get a number? And the first time I did it and I put it down and I just had this moment where I paused and I was like, this may be the dumbest thing I've done in a long time. And I was like, because all we know is that means my scale is giving me a general sense. So instead of focusing on how do I get the general sense to be pinpoint accurate specific?
Yeah.
I need to remember this is a general sense. That's all I need. But I think that, you know, so in the pain world, part of it is figuring out other ways to let people in your life know. Some of it is figuring out how do you make some of those accommodations? How do you make some of those adjustments? And I know I'd mentioned it to you before, and, you know, and I've talked about this one before, but if you can humor me, one of my go-to metaphors that I use when I talk about, well, life in general, but chronic pain specifically, is I use the example of a cell phone battery. The idea being, if you imagine you have your own internal battery, we charge our phones predominantly overnight. You plug it in, just like we sleep. That is the main way that we recharge our internal battery. Most people wake up, you would hope the average person has the capacity to wake up at 100%, though I would argue most adults don't, but they could.
Yeah.
When you have any chronic condition, and it's not even just pain, anxiety, depression, you know, pain for sure. I think of that like pulling your phone on and off a charger all night long. So for somebody with pain, a good night's sleep is waking up at 70%. And what's interesting is aging, natural aging. And you put up a post the other day that I loved where like, you know, on the age is just a number. No, it isn't. Like there's realities.
Yeah, there's a lot of realities. Yeah.
Right. I think of aging being like, think about it. The longer you've had a phone, there is some natural battery degradation. It doesn't, we don't like it. We tolerate it, but we don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, but if you think about that battery, if you wake up at 70%, well, I can make it through my day at 70%. I might have to be more thoughtful about how I use my battery or how I use my phone compared to other people. I can't be frivolous or do random extra things, but at 70%, you can do it. I think about life like all the apps on your phone. You have a relationship app, you have a parenting app, you have a finance app, you have a work app. These are all the applications, and they drain your battery. A pain app is so obnoxious. You can't delete it. You can't close it. It stays open, and it's worse than GPS. It can kill your battery in whatever rate it wants. So most of our lives, we work on figuring out an algorithm. You know, what drains my battery and what level, how much? So how can I budget my day? A pain app makes budgeting really difficult, because what happens is you're like, well, pain could be taking anywhere from 5 to 50% of my battery. Well, and if on average in the last week, it's taking up 25%, you're basically just keeping 25% in reserve. And some days you might not need it, which are frustrating days when you're like, actually, today was pretty good. I could have gotten more done, but I couldn't risk it. Other days, nope, if it's on the 50% side. And we've all had those days where you wake up, you look at your phone, you're like, oh, 70%, not bad. And by the end of breakfast, your battery's at like 35%. And yeah, you're like, what the? Yeah. I didn't even do anything.
Yeah.
And at 35% battery, now you can't make it through your day.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, you're going to immediately look for anything you can cancel. If you had to, you know, pick up some things at CVS, but you're not out of them yet, well, then you're going to be like, not going to do that today. You know, not going to the pharmacy. Like, I can do that tomorrow. But the problem is then the whole day you're looking for little ways to charge, little ways to plug in, little ways to, you know, and like some people might be like, oh, I usually have one cup of coffee. Today I had two, or I went out, or, and it's really interesting. Some people will nap. I don't actually think napping, very few people napping charges their battery. I think the main reason it helps for some people is it prevents battery drain. So if your battery's at 40% and you sleep for an hour, if during that hour it would have gone from 40 to 30, it will stay at 40 and you cut an hour out of your day. So now you're a little bit closer to the end of the day.
Yeah.
But, oh, sorry, were you going to say
something? No, I was just going to say that whole scenario going to CVS literally happened to me the other day. I mean, to see, it was CVS. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was exactly that. I put off going to CVS. I needed a couple. I wasn't out of them yet. I opted not to go. And mm-hmm. and I, consciously, I wasn't thinking of any of this, right, at all. But what I ended up doing is kind of literally sitting at this, I don't know if it was here or upstairs, but literally propping my leg up because that's what felt good, you know, to yep. my hip at the time, right? It's so interesting how this has dictated different aspects of my life now, you know, without it being in the forefront of I realizing in the moment, this is what's happening kind of thing. I'm making an accommodation or I'm rerouting everything. Yeah. It's fascinating.
Because I think we do these internal calculations, but not consciously all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
so again, examples I use are end of the day, if your battery is at 15% and you're driving home and somebody calls you, a friend, a family member, a difficult person in your life, right? I think we all do a quick internal calculation, right? My battery's at 15%. I look down at my phone and I'm like, ooh, if this person's in a good mood, they could give me 5%, but they can cost me 20. Yeah. That's their range, +5 to -20. And I'm at 15. What's going to happen is I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm going to screen it out because I'm basically like, I can't risk it. I can't risk answering because I'm already so low battery. But God forbid I have a guilt app on my phone. And that opens up. Now, just because my phone rang and I didn't answer, guilt will take 5%. And I drop from 15% to 10%. Because I didn't answer the phone. And at 10%, your phone goes into low power mode. It shuts down non-essential applications. And all of a sudden, everything is going to feel more threatening.
Yeah.
Everything is going to be more. So a bunch of things happen. The first thing I think happens is when you're low battery, first thing you lose is filters. I think we all filter communication, and the more formal a setting you're in, the more energy or battery you have to use to filter. You know, hopefully you use less when you're around people that you're comfortable with, but we all filter to some degree. And so when you're low battery, there's no filter. It's gone. That's where, if you've ever heard somebody say, I got to get out of here before I say something I regret, right? Like, it's because if the wrong person walks up and asks the wrong question, they're going to get the full unbridled response, like no, which is scary. You know, that's why, or couples or people will say like, whoa, like you snapped at me. It was pretty nasty. And it's like, yeah, because normally I filter that out a little bit and I couldn't. The other thing we lose is any sort of self-protective like defense mechanisms, which I think of as shields. So we lose our filter and we lose shields, which means things people say hit, right? If normally I have a shield up, it'll hit the shield. I feel it, drains my battery a little bit, but it doesn't hit me directly. And God forbid it's thrown at a sensitive spot. Different story. So the example I always use, I was going to kill me at some point, you know, for this example, but like is, and it's not even a real example. If I came home and my battery was at 10% or less, and normally I bring in the trash barrels, but I just can't. I come in and I just sit on the couch. I can't move. Now I feel guilty. I'm feeling worse, which drains my battery. Well, if she walks in the door and the first thing she says is, hey, did trash pickup not come? In my mind, she has thrown a rock at me. Now, she likely was just asking a legitimate or genuine question, not giving me any grief at all. But I'm sitting there. And so that rock is going to hit me, which means I feel it. I'm going to take it incredibly personally. She doesn't even know she threw a rock. So now I have no filter. I'm going to snap back, you know, and I'm going to say, oh, hi, it's nice to see you too.
Yeah.
Amazing that you walk in the door and the first thing you do is point out the one thing I didn't do.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So now I've thrown a rock back at her.
Yeah.
If she has the battery that her shields are still up, I throw the weirdest rock ever at her. It's going to hit the shield, fall to the floor, and she's going to go, what? No. Like, you always bring them in. I just figured maybe they legit didn't come and we had to call the town and have them come get it. You know, and now we're good. But if she's low battery, she walks in, asks a simple question. And in her mind, I threw a rock at her for no reason. It hits her and she's going to go, well, nice to see you too. Do you have any idea what I've been through today? And I ask you one simple question. You act like a jerk. Now our whole night's ruined just because we're both low battery.
Yeah.
So like I tell couples all the time, like check in on your battery, because if you're both low battery, that is not the time to have big conversations with pain and budgeting and day. And I mean, this is why, you know, and I had my own epiphany years ago with the notion of that phrase, don't cry over spilled milk. When I realized we think that's about kids, it's not. In my mind, it's about us. Kids wouldn't cry when they spill something if we didn't get upset. But why do we get upset? Well, if I have budgeted 15% battery to get my kids up, dressed, fed, and out of the house, the second one of them spills something, it jumps to 20 or 25% battery. And I didn't budget for that, which means that's threatening my day if I've budgeted my day so tight, which means I'm going to get mad or upset. Whereas on a weekend, if I have same battery in the morning, but much less to do, I respond like the parent I wish I did. No big deal. Whatever. We'll clean it up. Like it happens. And then I'm like, why can't I do that every day? Well, on Wednesday, Monday and Tuesday, it already beat me down. By Wednesday morning, I wasn't waking up at 70. I was now at 60 or 50. And that same thing, no filter, no shield. And so pain, I think one of the things that's tough is it's changing that algorithm, right? It's learning, I don't like it. I don't like that. And especially if you were somebody most of your life who with 70% battery could do more than most people could with 100 because you weren't wasting time and you were really efficient. And a bunch of things happen. One is people won't realize that you're struggling. Because if you can do with 50 or 60% battery, what a lot of people would need 70 or 80%. With pain specifically, it can feel very isolating, because if you don't look unhealthy, well, then if you're talking to somebody who has no pain issues, no medical issues, and they're not doing as much as you're doing in life, there's some motivation for that person internally or intrinsically to be like, well, your pain can't be that bad. Because if your pain is that bad and you're doing all this, what does it mean about me?
Yep.
So people want to almost dismiss it for their own, you know, kind of ego hit, right? Their own like, well, come on, look at you. You're in better shape. You're in better this. You're doing that. Like, it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
Because. Yeah. And so.
And this is me to a T, because I feel like, and I've had several doctors tell me this, that, and I tell them I have what I would call a high threshold for physical pain, right? I mean, I can keep the wheels turning. Being in what I think the level of pain that I can keep doing all of that with, a lot of people would shut it down, you know? Mm-hmm. And doctors hate that, because it really, I had one doctor tell me that it drives him nuts because he's having a hard time figuring out where I'm actually at from a physical standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, where is the line for me? Like, how bad am I pushing through stuff I have no business pushing through? Or is this discomfort? It's really tough from a doctor's perspective. So any doctor that's ever treated me, I apologize greatly. because I feel like I have learned what is actual pain, and that's the stop button. Mm-hmm. And then what is more discomfort, and that is, okay, a workaround button, you know? And it's a tough balancing act, but I love this point, because I feel like this can brew up a lot of resentment, you know?
Yeah.
From them to me and me to them.
100%. And I think it becomes really important to know what charges your battery.
Yeah.
And what drains your battery.
Yeah.
First is looking for low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Are there things in your life that you donate battery to that you always did, and you just keep doing it because that's how you've done it? You know, people in your life that you're like, oh, I donate 10% of battery a day, or maybe not every day, but every week they're getting at least 30 or 40% somewhere. And it's kind of maybe you used to be able to do that. And now all of a sudden it's hey, that's coming out of my own battery. That's making it so when I get home at the end of the day, I don't have anything in reserve. And I'm tense, or I'm frustrated, or I just need to be alone, or it's being able to protect that a little bit. And then it's being able to start to look and say, I think when you're dealing with pain, a certain percentage of it is battery conservation.
Yeah.
If you wake up on a Saturday and you have something really important Saturday afternoon, if the rules used to be, oh, no problem, I can get up, I can clean up, pay some bills, do some yard work, exercise, make some calls, do some errands. And as long as I have an hour to kind of shower and get ready, that's enough of a recharge. So that's not the rules anymore. That's not the algorithm. And when we don't adjust to that, what happens is people wake up in the morning and go, well, what am I supposed to do? Nothing. Then the pain wins. And they say F you to the pain. And they're like, I'm going to do all those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then 3 o'clock hits, your battery's at 20, 25%. And you're like, oh no, now what do I do? Either I'm not going to this important thing, which is going to really feel like pain wins, or you go and your battery's low. And the challenge with that is, this is how I think of like stress or anxiety, is like watching your battery. If you get to a graduation and your battery's at 20%, every time you pick up your phone to look at the battery and turn the screen on, it drains your battery a little bit. But you're worried about the battery and you're trying to keep an eye on it, which ironically drains it quicker. So if the graduation was supposed to start at 3 and it's 3:15, that's where you're going to see people tapping their watch being like, this is ridiculous. We got to go.
Yeah.
This, because they know I have depleting resources.
Yeah.
And I can't waste it on this.
Yeah.
It's the same reason people will resist larger social settings, right? Because, you know, if you talk to somebody at a party and they say something obnoxious and it takes, I don't know, 5% of your battery. Well, if your battery's at 60%, somebody says that, it takes 5%, you're going to be like, okay, I'm just going to walk over there and not talk to you anymore. But if your battery is at 20%, same person, same comment, same 5%, totally different experience, because that is 25% of your available resources now.
Yeah.
That one comment brought you from 20 to 15, and you are now 5% away from low battery. And all you're going to be doing is looking at that party going, how do I get out of here? I got to go through these people, through the house, to my, because nobody wants to be out when their battery dies.
Yeah.
Nobody. And so all of a sudden, those things are more difficult. And
yeah,
I use the battery to explain introversion and extroversion.
This example is so great, because I also feel like, you know, if you're driving around in your car and you watch your gas tank start going down, and invariably the law is that the second half of your, the bottom half of your gas tank goes by much faster than the top half, right? Mm-hmm. The top half takes its time, blah, 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 blah. You get halfway and it looks, oh, I've got half a tank, but very quickly that half tank becomes a quarter tank, not nearly mm-hmm. as fast as the full tank became three quarters of a tank. And, yep. And I feel like the battery's the same thing. Right. When your battery gets to a certain spot, it's going to deplete a lot faster when it's down at the bottom part, right, of battery life, as opposed to fully charged or close to fully charged.
Yep.
It slows down. So when you're at that point in your battery, I feel this so much, even sitting there going, wait a minute, why? Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go. I got places to go, people to meet, you know, or whatever, thinking it's because yep. I'm worried about the battery in the back of my head, you know.
And anything, and it's why people will see when they're low battery, they'll have more road rage.
Yes.
Right? Because somebody driving obnoxiously, or somebody cutting you off and then you miss a light, or somebody blocking an intersection. If you're low battery, you're basically sitting there going, this jackass just took 4% of my battery because of how they're driving. And you will be really mad at that person because they've stolen from you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's first thing in the morning and you're at 90%,
it's,
you're going to be like, you're an idiot,
dummy.
Like, where do you think you're going that? Yeah. Whatever. Like, it's not, because you have the capacity.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. I, ironically, given the type of work you do, you know, my go-to example for kind of how this can play out with motivation is the gym, which is funny, because I don't think I've actually step foot in a physical gym in like 10 years. Well, I mean, other than that, the retreat, you know,
right.
I do,
I
walk and I do things at home, but like, when I was in grad school, and I would go to the gym regularly, I didn't have this framework, but I needed 15% battery to get to the gym. Anything less than 15%. And I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. So sometimes I'd come home at 13%. And all I would start thinking is, why haven't I changed? How come I'm not getting ready yet? How come I'm on the couch? That guilt, that shame, that negative self is actually draining my battery further. If I came home and said, oh, I'm 2% shy, what do I need to get myself 2% battery? You know, well, that would help me get towards the goal. And at one point, I stopped going to the gym. And what I realized is the gym I was going to was in like a strip mall, and there was like a small convenience store at the end that got bought out and they put in a huge grocery store. So it took up parking and it became a much bigger draw. All of a sudden, parking became such a pain. The lot was always full. People were fighting for spots. People would park at the end. You couldn't get around. All of a sudden, it was taking 20 to 25% for me to get to the gym. And for me, what I realized is if I went to the gym, 15% is what I needed to get there. I would get back 20 to 25%. So it's not a massive gain, but it was a net gain of 5 or 10% battery. The second the parking jumped and it was a 20 or 25%, Well, now it was a variable that I couldn't control. And there were times I was leaving the gym and it was now net negative.
Mm.
And the worst was if I used my 15% to drive to the gym, drove around the parking lot, couldn't find parking, and got so frustrated I went home. Now, all I did was kill 15%.
Yeah. And nothing to show for it, per se.
Nothing to show for it, which I didn't get it back. I went home and I didn't have this framework, but I stopped going because it tweaked the algorithm.
Yeah.
And at the time, had I realized that, had I been able to say, oh, yeah, this is exactly why, I would have been able to say, all right, interesting. I can't necessarily make my gym routine have a higher payout. So I'm going to have to figure out, can I move my schedule? Is the parking better at different times? Or I might actually have to leave the gym and go to a different... But I didn't have this awareness. I just started to beat myself up.
Yeah.
About I was so good and I was going and then I just dropped off out of nowhere. And my internal dialogue was, or monologue was, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this? Well, it's because what I didn't realize is just a numbers game.
Yeah. Yeah. This is such a great example, the whole battery thing that applies to everything in life. And this might be a good place to kind of sew this up, because I feel like that is a takeaway for anybody in a lot of different situations and just life in general, right? It doesn't have to be a situation or whatever. And it brings a level of awareness to us as individuals. Like, I'm more aware of things when I can think through things this way. As far as my pain battery and the taser person behind me. And yeah, I'm going to have a chat with that taser person behind me. and I can't thank you enough for these, because I truly feel like these are life-changing scenarios, life-changing examples that people can actually take and apply to their own life. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate them.
Oh, I think it's all about when you find something that makes sense, you know, or that you can apply, I think it's easier. And I think with this one, if you can walk away with it being a little bit more aware of your battery, and also being able to put it into context of, so if there are things in your life that you are draining your battery that you don't need to be, or areas that people say like, well, can I take care of this or do that? It's moving to a place where you can say, oh, I hate that somebody else is going to do it, but my battery is better spent elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and if I have something important Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning, it's okay for it to be battery conservation and say, I'm not going to talk to that person. I'm not going to do that. Like, and what you'll see is that pain will start. The ideal would be that it starts not influencing or interfering with as many important variables or important timeframes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough, because this has been super helpful for me personally, as you and I chatted, because this is kind of my life right now, is dealing with all of this, and puts a whole different light on how I can deal with it and be more effective communicating as well. And I think that's super, super important dealing with chronic pain. And good news for me is hopefully there's light at the end of my Taser Man tunnel here, Taser Man hopefully will be non-existent after a while, hopefully, knock on wood. But I can't thank you enough.
Even if you could get it to be like they took away his taser, gave him a new one, and that one can only go like 0 to 3 instead of 0 to 10.
Oh, you know, it's so funny, because Taser Man disappeared for 3 days after I had the injection in my hip, right? I have had an injection, and I had 3 days of being 100% pain-free. So that taser guy was on vacation for 3 days. And I've never felt so good in my life. And I never valued what being pain free is until I had those 3 days, you know. And it put a whole light on, for me, what I have been dealing with and what I'm still currently dealing with. Because we take so many things for granted. And I realized right away how I was taking just being a normal person for granted, you know, that, you know, different levels of pain affect your life in every way, shape, or form, you know. But But this example is so helpful. Actually, this whole conversation has been so perfect, and I can't thank you enough, my friend, for doing this.
Thank you for having me on. I was so excited even to just see you and catch up and like, yeah, I mean, and if this helps anybody, you know, that's
well, tell everyone why we're here, where right? they can find you out there in internet lands.
The best place to find me is right now is on Instagram. You know, and it's DRJ period Smith. So it's like Dr. J period Smith, DRJ Smith. But yeah, that's probably the best place to find me.
Well, thank you again. And, you and I will be in touch soon.
Absolutely. So
all
good
right.
To
thank
see you.
you.